you should see a red dot.
Yeah, I see that.
Okay, and is there a timer starting?
Yeah,
zero
it, yeah.
Okay, so can I please sit down or at least stop talking? In this tutorial, I'm speaking about regular singular points for second order ODEs. So, in general, you have some differential equation for order n. Okay? So, the kth derivative evaluated at x, and then the coefficient function evaluated at x. So we have, an nth order ODE. So if the pk are analytic in a neighborhood of zero, then we say it's a regular point. If they are not, not regular point, an ordinary point. Ordinary. If it's not an ordinary point, but x to the n minus k, pk, are analytic in a neighborhood of zero, then we call it a regular singular point. And if it's not regular, it's an irregular singular point, but we aren't going to talk about those. Then it's a regular singular point. So, for example, in this tutorial, we're just going to be talking about second order ODE. So, just to prevent it, all of this works, but it becomes enormously cumbersome for higher order ODE. So, e.g., x squared y double prime plus x y prime equals y. That's a this is a regular singular point at zero. First of all, right, we want to divide by x squared, because we want the coefficient of the highest derivative to be 1. And then when you divide by x squared, well, then you're going to have a 1 over x here and a 1 over x squared here, but it's all cool, because once you sort of renormalize, once you throw the x squared back in, then the coefficients are analytic. Now, an example of a point that is not a regular singular point, that is an irregular singular point, is x equals 0 for this. Irregular singular. Okay. Now, what we're going to be talking about are regular singular points. We're going to be talking about solutions that have what sort of, I guess the most common name for these are called Frobenius series. That's kind of a scary name, but it's nothing scary. It's a slight generalization of a power series. I guess we're going to be showing that if x equals 0 is regular singular, then there exists a solution of the form x to the alpha ax, where ax is analytic in a neighborhood of zero, and where alpha is some number that we're going to determine. So that's what we mean by Frobenius series. You have a power series, but you might multiply it by x to the 1/2. So instead of, x squared, x cubed, you have x to the 3/2, x to, Instead of having integers, you have the half integers. 3 over 2, 5 over 2, etc. So, okay, an example of where this comes up, or an example of why we need this more general type of solution, is given by this. So y double prime plus y over 4x squared equals 0. Okay. So if we do power series, so if we say let y be the sum from n equals 0 to infinity of a n x to the n, and we do power series, so we say let y equals this, and then we put that into the equation, and then we compare powers of x. So this is the equation we have. So if we try y of this form, then we get what we end up getting is for the coefficients of x to the n, we get this recurrence relation. So n minus a half squared a n equals 0 for n equals 0, 1, 2, da da da. And what that does is it forces all coefficients a n to be 0. And that's not good, because that gives us a trivial solution, and we already knew that 0 was the solution of this equation. So this forces a n to be 0 for all n. So yx equals 0 is the trivial solution. So I'm going to do this specific example and then talk about the situation in general. So instead, try yx equals x to the alpha, and then a standard power series. So sum from n equals 0, a n, x to the n. So instead, we try this guy. Okay. Whenever we're doing power series, it's very sort of nitpicky. It takes a while, but it's very standard. Like, there's nothing difficult about it. It's just comparing coefficients. So I am skipping a lot of details. Like, you know, when I said this, for example, you had to like take the derivatives and then compare the coefficients, and that takes some time. And you have to be careful. Don't be sloppy and like try to rush through power series examples, because you're going to suck and you're going to lose a lot of marks. And, you know, like, you are, like, it is important to be precise for this. Like, you know, like, this is not something where, oh, like, I'm a big picture person, like, makes sense. Like, no, you have to be careful for this, or else you're going to get zeros. Like, because, you just have to be careful for power series, because it's a very nitpicky subject. So, instead we try this, and what do we get when we put that into our ODE? So when we put that into our ODE, we get this. So the coefficient, when we compare coefficients of x to the n plus alpha, we end up getting n plus alpha times n plus alpha minus 1 plus a quarter times an equals 0. For n equals 0, 1, 2, dot, dot, dot. Okay, what does that mean? That means that, first of all, when n is 0, what does that tell us? That tells us when n is 0, and we get alpha minus 1, plus a quarter, a0 equals 0. And, you know, if you factor this, you find out that it has a double root of alpha equals a half. So either a0 is 0 or alpha is a half. And we're looking for a non-trivial solution, so a0 is not 0. So, you know, in principle, we could try, other guys being non-zero. Like, a0 could be 0 and then a1 could be different. That would... Yes, so Basically, when we try a solution of this form, we always assume that a0 is the non-zero. Like, at least a0 is non-zero. Because if a0 were 0, we could just change alpha. Like, we could subtract 1 from alpha. So a0 is non-zero, so that forces alpha to be a half. Okay? So once alpha is a half, then that fixes alpha. So these other equations, like when n is 1, when n is 2, when n is 3, etc., then this part is not going to be 0 anymore, because alpha is fixed. Alpha is now a fixed number. Alpha is a half. So this stuff here, when n is 1 or 2 or 3, etc., this is never going to be 0. So that means that the other ans have to be 0. So that means that a1 is 0, a2 is 0, so on. So what does that mean? That means that y of x, well, it's x to the alpha, a0, because all the other ans are 0. And x to the alpha is x to the 1 half, so this is a0 square root of x. So that gives us a non-trivial solution of the ODE. Okay, that's fantastic. We found a non-trivial solution. There are two questions you might have. How do we find another solution? Because it's a second order linear ODE. The fact that there are x's, that's fine, it's still linear. The linearity is determined by the fact that we don't have like prime squared or y squared. So this is a linear ODE, it just doesn't have constant coefficients. So, we know it's going to have two linearly independent solutions. So we want to find the other solution. And also, we would like to know that this method works in general. So those are the two things I hope to address in the rest of the tutorial. Now we're looking at this in general. So say we have this equation, okay? Y double prime px over x y prime plus qx over x squared y equals 0. And it has regular singular point at 0. So having a regular singular point at 0 means that either this p over x, either that is not analytic, or this is not analytic, and it's inclusive. They could both not be analytic. When we multiply this by x, and multiply this by x squared, it is analytic. Like, that's what it means to be a regular singular point. So by themselves, they are not analytic, but if we multiply this by x and this by x squared, giving us p and q, those guys are analytic. So p, q are analytic at x equals 0. So that means that px can be expanded in a power series, and that qx can be expanded in a power series. What we're going to do is we're going to say, okay, let's try a solution that has the form of a Frobenius series, then find out what conditions that forces it to have, and then if you actually put that into the equation, it works. So try yx is equal to x to the alpha, and we're going to find out what alpha has to be, an x to the n. So try this as our candidate solution. Okay, so what is... So, just to make the differentiation easier, let's put this alpha up. There, okay? So what is y? What is y prime? Y prime is n plus alpha, an x to the n plus alpha minus 1. What is y double prime? It's n plus alpha. Now we bring down n plus alpha minus 1. Okay, so that's what y prime is, and that's what y double prime is. Okay, so then if we put all these, you know, we have the power series for y prime, and y double prime, and p and q, so we throw them all into this equation, and we see what that force is. So we throw them all in, and that gives us an alpha plus n, alpha plus n minus 1, x to the alpha plus n. So this is the y double prime term. So what I'm doing, now see how there's this n plus alpha minus 2 here. So I multiply the equation by x squared. Right? So we have x squared y double prime, x squared y double prime. Then there's an x here. There we go. So this is our equation. So the x squared that's multiplying the y double prime gets rid of this minus 2. The x that's multiplying this term gets rid of this minus 1. So this is 0, and then we compare coefficients of x to the, well, if we compare coefficients of just x to the alpha, okay, x to the alpha, so, well, then that's just the n equals 0 term here, so we get a 0, so alpha minus 1 plus, so how do we get x to the alpha here? Well, when this n is 0 and this n is 0. Okay. Remember, like, you were doing like heavy duty symbolic manipulation here. If it makes you more comfortable, you might like to not have two n's. You might want to make this into an m or something. So the way to get x to the alpha here is when this n is 0 and this n is 0. So that's p 0, a 0, alpha. And then again, the way to get x to the alpha here is when is when n is 0, this n is 0, and when this n is 0. So a 0. So if we compare the coefficients of x to the alpha, we get this equation. Okay? And so we define this thing called the indicial polynomial. It's just the name. Like comparing indices. That's why it's called indicial. Initial polynomial p alpha is just defined to be this thing here. So alpha squared plus p naught minus 1 alpha plus q naught. So if we want a solution of this form to be a solution, if we want a function of this form to be a solution, then, well, definitely alpha is going to have to be a root of p, of this big p. Okay, like this initial polynomial, alpha is going to have to be root of it. That, so that's one condition that we have nailed down. Okay, now let's compare coefficients of the higher powers. So when we do that, we get a n. Alpha plus n minus 1. Okay, now we have this So when you have two sums and you're looking like, you know, we have two sum of x's and sum of powers of x, sum of powers of x, sum of powers of x, and we want to look at how we get a single term by multiplying them, like that's called convolution. So we want to know how we get any given power of x from this convolution. So it's going to be this, k equals 0 to n, p n minus k, a k, alpha plus k. So this, these are the terms that are going to have x to be n plus alpha. And then we have another sum, so k equals 0, q n minus k, a k. So this is going to have to be 0, so we can rewrite this to be of the form. So, I had to do one more step, you know, to get to this result. We can rewrite it using the initial indicial polynomial as this. We need this to hold for all n, okay? Now, what does that tell us? Well, if we knew that the indicial polynomial was never 0 for any n, then we could divide by that, and that would determine an. So if this were not 0, we could divide by this, and that would tell us what an is. So we're going to end up breaking this into separate cases. So it's not going to be pretty. So if we knew that if p alpha minus n is not 0, or any n equal 1, 2, 3. Like, we know it's going to be 0 for n equals 0, because, you know, we chose alpha to be a root of p. But if it's not 0 for any other n, like n equals 1, n equals 2, then an is determined. And that then we can solve that will uniquely determine the function. So we know that it's a second order ODE, and in particular, this is a second order polynomial, so it's going to have two roots. They might be the same, but it has two roots. So let alpha 1, alpha 2 be the roots of P alpha. Okay, so we're giving the roots names, and let's assume for concreteness that the real part of alpha 1 is greater than or equal to the real part of alpha 2, because they might be complex roots. They might be the same, but we're saying greater than or equal, so that's fine. Okay, so then we know that p alpha 1 plus n is not equal to 0 for n equals 1, 2, 3, because p only has two roots. Alpha 1 is one root, and if we add positive integers to it, we know we're not going to hit alpha 2, because we assume that alpha 1 was to the right of alpha 2. Right? Like, alpha 1 is to the right of alpha 2. So, if alpha 1, alpha 2, they might be, you know, if they're complex, they'll be like this, but and if they're real, they'll be like this. But we know that alpha 1 is to, you know, It might not be strictly to the right, but we know that alpha 2 is not over here. So if we add, you know, n equals 1, n equals 2, n equals 3, we know we're never going to hit the other root. Because p only has two roots. So we know that this is never going to be 0 if we shove alpha 1 in there. So that means that, yeah, for alpha 1, yeah, we can actually, this works out. So that means that yx equals x to the alpha 1 if then the an can be determined. Then an can be determined. So that y is a solution. So what that tells us is that there is at least one solution that has what we call the form of a Frobenius series. So, yes, so there is one solution that has this form. We let y equal this, and then the an can be uniquely determined by this recurrence relation, and then you do have to then check, but it will work, that, yeah, like if y is defined, if the an are defined by this recurrence relationship, then y is a solution. Okay, so, but now we want to know about the second solution, and that's where the technicalities come in. So, you know, so one thing you can, like, take away with you is that you know how to find at least one solution, okay? There's no complication there. Like, this is reasonably straightforward. So if there's a regular singular point, there is always one solution that has the form of a Frobenius series. Absolutely have to know that. You should fail the course if you don't remember that at the end. Whereas the rest of this stuff is complicated, and you do not deserve to fail the course if you don't remember the rest of the stuff at the end. Okay. So now, let's see. Do I have time to do this one example before I go on? Is convergence groups. I'll save the example until the end because I want to get through the possible cases. Okay, so to find a second solution, there are four possibilities. Okay, so the first one. If alpha 1 does not equal alpha 2 plus n, for any n for any positive n, this let's see, did I want this to be positive or no, I wanted to exclude the possible, so when they're equal, that's a separate case. Yes, so for any n equal 1, 2, and so on. So if these guys, alpha 1 is something, it might be 1 over 2, and we want to exclude the possibility that alpha 2 is, remember alpha 2 is to the left of alpha 1, so we want to exclude the possibility that alpha 2 is like minus a half or minus 3 halves or something like that. So if that does not happen, then we can play the same game again. Then you could say, let y, then we can determine the coefficients of yx equals x to the alpha 2 bn xn. Like, we can play the same game again, and it will work. Because, to make the whole thing work, you needed that this factor here was not zero. It had to not be zero. If it was not zero, then we could uniquely determine the AMs. So we can play the whole game again, and we'll get a distinct solution. And the reason it's a distinct solution is because we're excluding the possibility that these two roots are the same. So we know that, we'll call this y2 maybe, so we know that y1, well, is equal to x to the alpha 1, you know, a0. And we're assuming that a0 and b0 are not 0, so we know it's y2 is x to the alpha 2, and alpha 1 is not alpha 2, so certainly these are linearly independent, because this is not some real, this is not a constant multiple of the other guy. You have to multiply by some power of x to make one into the other, and that's not allowed. So these two are linearly independent, because one is not a constant multiple of the other. So if alpha 1, so the point is that if these guys are distinct, and they're not separated by an integer, then you have two linearly independent solutions that have the form of Frobenius series. This is sort of the best possible situation. There's not much more to say, but it's, you know, fairly simple. I really don't know how much of this this finding a second solution you're supposed to have at your fingertips. It's a bit cumbersome, it's kind of hard to remember. If I had to remember it, I would probably just work it out from sort of more or less first principles the way I'm doing it here. I just don't have it instantly at my memory, what the second solution looks like. But definitely remember that you can find one solution that has this form. Okay, so a second possibility. If alpha 1 is equal to alpha 2 plus n for some n equals 1, 2, 3, so they're not the same, because we're not admitting the possibility of n equals 0, but if they are separated by an integer. But that sum, so I erased this unfortunately, but I'm going to write the essential part back again. But this sum here so, okay, what am I saying here? I'm saying we have two roots, and if they're separated by an integer, so some specific n, then, okay, and if this sum for that specific n, so I'm not making an assertion about what the sum looks like in general. I'm just saying, if it turns out that for that specific n, maybe n is 4, so when you do this sum for n equals 4, if it turns out to be 0, so that this is sort of a non-generic case, but if it turns out to be 0, then an is free. Because remember we had, p alpha plus n, an is equal to this sum here. So in this case, where alpha 1 is alpha 2 plus n, the p will be 0, so we're going to have 0 times an equals 0. And an, is not determined by that. An is not nailed down. Then an is free, since p only has two roots, it's never going to be zero again. I erased it again, but we had p alpha plus n, let me use a big N to be specific. Here. So I'm talking about just one specific big N. So then a big N is free. Now, remember that all the ANs were determined by this recurrence relationship. Well, I know that p is only 0 at 2 points. So I know that after, so for n, so after that big n point, like, so for little n bigger than big n, this is never going to be 0 again. Because it was already 0 for alpha 1, and in the case of alpha 2, you know, the left-hand and the right-hand side were both 0. So, okay. So in this special case, there will again be an independent solution that has the form of a Frobenius series, and in this case, the an is going to be the like free parameter. So I didn't talk about that as thoroughly as I want to, but since there's not much time, I do want to talk about the other two cases. So I'll just say that there is an independent solution of form x to the alpha 2, and in this case, alpha 2 was just alpha 1 plus big N. Say bn. I won't say much more about that. So hopefully there'll be questions about this stuff on the problem set, so you can get a sort of firm. You can get yourself get some confidence with working with this. Okay, so then the other two cases are the cases where there is not another solution of the form of a Frobenius series, and this is similar to when you have like a repeated root. Just a very quick aside. Remember when you had repeated roots with linear second order ODEs? So if you had a repeated root, then you had to consider having a solution of the form like x to the x e to the rx. Remember that? So this is similar to that situation, where instead of having two solutions that were like, you know, e r 1x, e r 2x, you had, you know, e rx and then x e rx. So this is very similar in spirit to that. So, okay, so the possibilities are alpha 1 is equal to alpha 2, and alpha 1 minus alpha 2 is n, you know, some integer n is bigger than 0, but that sum does not turn out to be 0. So in the sum, ak alpha plus k, p n minus k plus q n minus k is not 0. So in these cases, second solution does not have form x to the alpha 2. It does not have this nice form. So I am going to talk in some more detail about the case where you have a repeated root, where alpha 1 is alpha 2. Okay, so if alpha 1 is alpha 2, what do we do? This is kind of a trick. But once you find the solution, you can check that it works. So, you know, tricks are okay if, like, even if you don't really understand why they work, as long as you can check the solution once you found it. And you can do that here. If y1, so let y1 of x be So let's just call it y of x. So this is our first solution, and just so I don't have to keep writing y1, I'll just call it y. But then our second solution, I'll call y2. So if y of x is x to the alpha 1, so this is our first solution, and we know that there is a solution of this form, solves y double prime plus p over x y prime plus q over x squared y. Oops. So if it solves that second order ODE, okay. Then, now this is kind of coming out of the blue, so doesn't have to make sense why I'm writing this. Let y, so now we're having, now we have this new thing that's a function of x and alpha. So the roots of, you know, so we have our second order ODE, and then we have this initial polynomial P that had two roots, alpha 1 and alpha 2, okay? So now alpha is not standing for a root of the initial polynomial, it's just this other parameter. The roots are alpha 1 and alpha 2, okay? I want to be very clear on that. So, okay, let y of x and alpha be defined this way. Okay, and the an of alphas are defined by they're defined by the recurrence relation here. An alpha minus. So they're defined by a recurrence relation, the an of alphas, and you know, when alpha is alpha 1, so an of alpha 1 is just going to be an. So remember, an and an of alpha are two distinct things. So now, you don't really have to remember this argument, maybe. You just really have to remember the output that we get at the end. So if this is confusing, you don't have to freak out. But yeah, so an of alpha 1 is this an. Okay, let L be this differential operator, d squared dx squared plus dx over x dx plus q over x squared. So we get, you know, if we put, no, I will call this y1, just to distinguish between y and y1. So L of y1 is 0. This is just rewriting the differential equation in the form of an operator. So if L of, the kernel of this is precisely the solutions of the ODE. Whereas L of y is not going to be 0 unless alpha is alpha 1. So you check that this is a0 x to the alpha minus 2. So this is a0, not a0 alpha, p alpha. Okay. Now, what we're going to do is we're going to take the derivative with respect to alpha and evaluate that alpha is equal to alpha 1. Okay? Now, if we take the derivative of the right-hand side with respect to alpha, well, we can do that. So, the right-hand side, so we take the derivative with respect to alpha and evaluate it at alpha equals 1 on the right-hand side. We're going to get a0. So remember, now x is the constant and alpha is the variable. So this is like an exponential. Log of x. P alpha plus a0 x to the alpha minus 2 p prime alpha. Okay, And now we stick alpha 1 in to the right-hand side. Now, what's crucial is that there was a repeated root here. So remember, big P was our initial polynomial, and it had a repeated root. So when we stick alpha 1 in, well, it's a root, so that's 0. But when we stick alpha 1 into the derivative, well, it's a repeated root, so the derivative is going to be 0. So the right-hand side is 0 when you take the derivative with respect to alpha and evaluate at alpha 1. Okay, now what about the left-hand side? So for the left-hand side, we get, you know, d of d alpha, ly, and evaluate at alpha equals alpha 1. Okay, now I'm going to, without any justification, of course this is true, switch the order of differentiation. For some reason I wrote alpha 2 here, but alpha 1 is alpha 2, because this was the case of a repeated root. So you can write alpha 1 or alpha 2, who cares? Okay, so what this is saying is that, L of this is 0. So L of the derivative with respect to alpha of y is 0. Okay? What is d alpha of y? Well, we just write it down. We'll move the alpha up here. So it's n equals 0. Okay, so so we take the derivative, so it's a n prime of alpha x n plus alpha, and then plus a n of alpha. So now we take the derivative of this. I'll just write it like this. Because remember, we're taking the derivative with respect to alpha. So this is like taking the derivative of, you know, like a to the x, which is a to the x log a. Oh, so this should be log alpha, log x. Okay. Let bn be okay. So I'm defining a new series of coefficients in terms of the a n alphas. Then what does that tell us? That tells us that dy, d alpha is equal to y, so we get y x alpha 1 log x plus the sum n equals 0 bn x to the n plus alpha 1. Okay, but y of x alpha 1 is precisely y1. Well, you can check that. So this is log x y1 of x plus n equals 0 bn x n plus x to the n plus alpha 1. So this is what our second solution looks like. And then we check that this actually works, that, you know, if y2 of x is defined this way, if y2 of x is defined this way, what do we have to do to check? Like, you know, it's not a solution just for any bn's. So what you do is you sort of do our argument in reverse, I guess. And you say, okay, if y2 is defined this way, you just verify that, yeah, indeed, the bn's are uniquely defined if you put this into the equation. And that this is a solution, therefore. Okay, so that's all the time we had. So what did I not do? What I did not do was spend any time talking about the case where alpha 1 was equal to alpha 2 plus n for n greater than 0, where that sum was not equal to 0, okay? So either that will not be expected, either you will not be expected to have any knowledge of that, or Dror will talk about it. I don't know which one of those will be the case. But remember, I did not talk about this, the fourth case. Okay? So can you turn off the...